Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 51. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dean Logan. Dean is the founder and CEO of Foundation, a specialty marketing consultancy for technology and technology-related organizations. A graduate of the Ringling College of Art and Design, Dean has been a graphic designer, art director, and creative director at several respected agencies throughout the Southeast. He's worked with clients such as AT&T, IBM, Visa, Lenovo, GE, and Novartis, just to name a few. In his spare time, he enjoys building Legos with his three kids, creating three-dimensional wall sculptures, and transforming his house into a one-of-a-kind, handmade, Disney-inspired haunted mansion for Halloween. Dean, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Lori. I appreciate you having me on the show and look forward to talking with you and hopefully providing something of value to your audience.
Oh, thank you, Dean. Why don't we start by taking a quick trip back in time?
We'd love to hear a story of how it is you once saw the future before you decided to begin building out your business, branding yourself. What was it that you thought you might be doing, say when you were a teenager?
Let me think. Well, I grew up in a house where there was always a lot of cultural things happening. My parents listened to jazz music and classical music, and my mom was a portrait painter. So I was always taking art classes and things and grew up in that environment. And even in high school, I was taking art classes and you know, doing well with them. So I thought, you know, this is probably something I would like to be able to earn a living at. Art major in college, and even back like in high school, I would set up like a little studio for myself and just design things and draw things, and not just like paintings, but stuff like what I guess you could consider logo type objects.
Mm-hmm.
So even then, I was being drawn towards the visual communication side of the business without really realizing it.
Right. Excellent. So initially you were into the arts for the most part. You grew up in the arts, it sounds like, with jazz and classical in the background. I'm not sure if that was professionally or whether it was just kind of something that your parents enjoyed, but from what you mentioned, I think you said your mother was a painter?
She was. And it wasn't professional. Dad was a businessman. He ran a commercial laundry, right?
Uh-huh.
So not exactly exciting stuff for an artist. But but they did listen to a lot of music. It was always on the background. And yeah, Mom was a portrait painter. She worked in oils. She said she was going to do a portrait of. She did one of my sister when she was like 10, and then she said, "Dean, I'm going to do one of you," and she has yet to finish it.
That's cute. I like that. My father started a dollhouse at one point, and it was many, many years ago. He's yet to finish it. I'm sure we all have projects of that sort. But I love that, you know, it's funny when we go back to your dad, you realize it or not, you had an entrepreneur to look up to as you were growing up, you know. So it's a good mix. I like looking at people's journeys because you get to kind of see where it sparked. What was it that they were able to look at growing up? What was it that was in their mindset initially that kind of developed their overall, you know, later on in life? So to see that you had a background in the arts, you had a father who was an entrepreneur, and you were naturally drawn to the visual communication side of the business, it makes perfect sense that the journey has taken you to where it has. But Dean, what do you feel like were some of the first steps that you took once you finished school and decided, you know what, I think I may want to build something up for myself? What was that moment you decided that you wanted to do that? And then what were some of those steps that you took?
Well, let's see. When I was in high school, I was I did took a lot of art classes. I was a fine art major in college, and I had a scholarship that I got into in this liberal arts college in Lexington, Kentucky, Transylvania University. And I was about to graduate, and, you know, it's a fine art curriculum, so it's sculpture and painting and that's kind of, there was no design there. And a friend of my dad's, who was in marketing, said, you know, Bob, your son with this art thing, you need to send him, he needs to learn to work on a computer. Because in 10 years, if your son's in this business, he will either be working on a computer or sweeping around one. So from there, I looked at different colleges and thought, okay, yeah, I need to do something that's going to actually be able to earn a paycheck. And that's when I started looking into, oh, graphic design. You really can make money doing this. So I looked at a number of schools and finalized on the Ringling College of Art and Design, which is in Sarasota, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I went there for a three-year program, and at the time, the course, the program was called Computer Graphics. That's all it was called, right? But it was really critical and good for me to get those skills, because that's when, I'm dating myself a little bit, but that was about the time when the commercial design and communications industry was moving onto computers. My first job out of school was at a place in Louisville, Kentucky. I moved back to Kentucky. It's called Power Communications now. But they said, hey, you know, they hired me as a, you know, art director. They said, yeah, we've got this program we'd like you to look at. It's still in the box. Go, it's over there. So I looked at the back of this area that was, you know, it's a big cube farm. One cube in the back had a little Macintosh set up, and the box, still in the wrapper, there was Photoshop. They had never used it before, so I got them started on that. And this was a company, we did a lot of catalogs, and a few years later, everything was digital in the company. But back to your question, getting the foundational education to take the fine arts and being able to translate it into something where I could create a living for myself was a very key step for me.
Doesn't matter what industry or profession you decide on. Make sure that you find a way to gain that foundational training in your industry, whatever the industry may be, whether you take on an internship, enroll yourself in courses, find mentors, you know, some way, shape, or form, you've got to go out and find that foundational information for you to even begin launching in the industry. So you went out, you began recognizing that not only did you have that background in the arts, but then that you were going to go ahead and turn it digital, the opportunity to move forward in the digital world. What do you find was difficult about, you know, translating your knowledge from, you know, the arts and the fine arts degree into, you know, kind of a digital realm?
I don't know that I had a lot of difficulty with it, but one of the challenges with a fine art process, there really isn't that much of a process. You know, art, you know, the whole left brain, right thing. Doing a painting or a sculpture is this, you know, unconscious act of creation, and things just happen, and you're not planning, and there's spontaneity and surprise and things that happen as you're creating something with your hands, what have you. The computer graphics is a very deliberate, specific process. So I had to take that sort of wild, you know, everything happening and floating around and be able to focus, okay, I need to make this a different color. To do that, I have to click this and then click on that and then do that. So it was applying a very rigid process to what had been a very intuitive, free-flowing function of creation.
That's interesting. When I look at art and graphic arts, it's funny for me because I can always, you know, pick up a sketch pad and do a quick drawing. But when I look at the way that my husband might transfer things into, you know, a digital version, to me it seems so much more complex than that natural flow of just kind of putting something together on. So to me, that it would seem like it would be difficult to begin learning the programmings and those processes in order to change that intuitive, natural way of creating something into a digital form. Did you find that it would slow down what you would do when you're working? You know, for instance, when I began building out the show, you know, there were different aspects of the show, logo and so forth, that I would begin creating, but then question whether or not that was exactly the way I wanted to create it, or begin doing some research on how, you know, I feel it should be created versus industry standards and different, you know, how it would be conveyed and things of that sort. And it turns into procrastination versus actual research. So do you feel that there's, you know, a specific area or metrics in particular that someone who's looking at taking off on an entrepreneurial journey should focus on? Do you feel there's something specific that they should be doing in particular in order to kind of avoid that ability to end up in procrastination mode?
I think the sketching part of the process, I mean, I start with sketches for 75% of the things that I do for myself or my clients. I will start with a sketch. And that is really good for focusing your ideas, getting rid of bad ideas quickly. So I would say whatever, and I guess I'm addressing the creative industry specifically because that's, you know, where my perspective is. But starting with sketches allows that intuitive part of the brain to work its magic. It helps you vet out good ideas from bad ideas very quickly. So I always recommend, even when I have teams and I was a creative director at agencies and we'd have, you know, now the software is just amazing, all the things it can do. But I would always make my teams start with sketches. I said, don't bring me printouts. I don't want to see printouts. I don't want to see your screen. Bring me sketches of your idea. Because if your idea is bad as a sketch, it will just be a very polished bad idea as a printout.
Right.
And one of the curses of the computer is that it does a couple of things. A, it can make a bad idea appear good because it looks finished. It looks polished. And it can also, if you're not careful, it can lead to paralysis by analysis because you can try so many different versions of something. You know, you can change endless colors and fonts and shapes and things all very quickly. And if you're not careful, instead of getting to good solutions in a timely fashion, because in the business world, you know, with any other, time is money.
Exactly.
So you won't have the luxury when you're a paid creative to just do 30 versions of something because you wanted to see how cool it could be this way or something, because the client's not going to pay for it.
Don't you wish though? I mean,
it'd be great if clients would pay for that. but it's so it's a discipline has to be applied to the use of technology. And I think most of the work should be done in the sketch phase. That's going to work. Yeah, that might work. I'll try that. So by the time I get to a computer, by the time I sit down in Illustrator or InDesign or what have you, I've 80% of what's going to go on that page is already done in my head. And I know it's going to work. And then that time with the computer is just bringing it to life and then sanding the edges and polishing and buffing until I get it just the way I want it.
I love that. And we're taught that in school, rough draft, guys. Doesn't matter what industry, whether it be art or anything else, when you're starting a project, really just kind of sketch out those ideas for yourself so that you can see it in full, so you can flesh out the good from the bad, really get to the heart of what it is you're looking to accomplish and kind of move forward with that. So
absolutely.
definitely. What do you feel was the key to your success and why?
I think I've always been a glass is half full kind of person. I've always tried to look at the bright side of things. It's very easy, well, in any business, but in the creative industry especially, it's very easy to get jaded and sort of a negative mindset, either about your clients or the business, those sorts of things. So I've always tried to focus on the positive. I have always been able to tell myself that this is a business that I'm doing, and it has certain parameters around that. The client is not going to like certain things. You will have to make the logo bigger sometimes. And it's a thing you are, yes, you're creating it, and it is your heart and soul and, you know, spirit that is into this. But to your client, it's a thing they're going to stick on their business card or a website they're going to publish. So they see it very differently than you do. I actually gave a talk recently about hiring and managing creatives. And the biggest point I made is that a problem creatives have, especially when they're just starting out, is they have a very difficult time separating what they're doing from why they do it. Which is to say, creatives do this because we're wired a weird way. We have this innate need and desire to express ourselves visually. And for that expression to be seen by people, we want, you know, when our drawing gets put up on the refrigerator with a magnet, right? Mom puts it up on the fridge. Oh, look what I did in school today. We love that. But it's very tough for us when a client said, I don't like that. I don't like that color. And we take it personally. We shouldn't. But we do. We can't help it. So being able to realize that this is a business, and if I want to create art, then I do it for myself and I do it on the side. But not to mix that passion and that mindset into, okay, I have this card I've got to do for a client, and they need it by a certain time, and I've got a certain budget, so I need to do the best I can within that parameter. That, I've always been pretty organized, I think. I try to take notes on things. I try to document stuff as best I can. That's a struggle for me because as a creative, you know, like any other creative, I loathe things like timesheets and stuff like that. But I keep them because I know I gotta have them at some point. And I think I'm always looking to push myself. I try not to rest on a laurel. I'm always sharpening my software skills. I can still, you know, sit down. I've been a creative director and had, you know, teams of, you know, 15, you know, up to 20 people. But I can still sit down if I need to in these programs and bat something out fast if I need to. Okay. And I think that's critical, is staying up with the technology and the software and where it's headed.
Continued learning, definitely.
Continued learning, yeah. Because I've seen that. I've seen people in this business who quit learning, I don't need to learn that. And it's really, it's hurt them.
Right. Industries are changing rapidly as technology does so, you know, and each year things are moving up that much quicker. So if you don't continue learning, you don't continue figuring out, you know, how industries are changing, whether it be, you know, in the digital world or not, you definitely can get left behind. But I love that you mentioned that, you know, one of the foundational pieces of your success was realistically your mindset, you know, keeping the thought process of the glass being half full, knowing that you're going to be successful regardless of, you know, how the path may pivot, is really, really important. So, Dean, if you had a time machine, and have the ability to go back, say, 10, 15 years, and could tell yourself just one thing, what do you feel like that one thing would be? If you could caution yourself on anything at all before taking this leap, or making that journey into the entrepreneurial world, what do you feel like you would tell yourself?
If I could go back, I'd say, you know, 10 or 15 years, I would tell myself, it's going to be harder than you think. it's not going to be as easy as you think. And you don't think it's easy. I know that. But I'm telling you, guy, me, 10 years ago, it's going to be tougher than you think. Things aren't going to happen as fast as you think. Your mindset, the way you think about the creative industry and the business, will change, because it will have to, as you get, once you're out on your own and you're doing this, you're going to have to really change your mindset. So be ready to pivot that way. And don't think that everything you've learned is going to apply once you get out there on your own, because it won't. You will have to learn new things. You will have to go in directions you never thought you did. And you will have to be more flexible and resilient than you know.
Awesome. I love it. It's not as easy as you think it's going to be. It's definitely going to be harder than you think. It's something where you need to be prepared for the ability to change 100% and continue learning. So I love that. Those are three awesome pieces that I too would probably tell myself if I had that time machine, you know, somewhere on hand. But in the essence of helping the listeners, do you happen to have a tip or a trick, a quote or an app or something that you could share with the audience?
Let me think. Sure. I've, like any entrepreneur or startup, I want to keep costs low. I use a number of apps, and I guess I'll give a shout out to some things here. I use Harvest. Harvest is a great low cost timekeeping invoice management tool. It's got a mobile version. It's easy to use. I think I pay like 10 bucks a month for it or something like that. And it saves me so much time because it organizes everything that the creative brain doesn't like to organize. So I would definitely recommend that to folks.
Awesome. Thank you. I've actually never heard of Harvest, so that's a new one for me as well. And I will not only check that out, but be sure to include a link on the show notes page. But the show, again, is really designed to assist entrepreneurs in coming up with ideas for new businesses in an industry that they may not have been thinking of. So, Dean, we would absolutely love to help you. If you had a magic wand instead of that time machine this time and could change anything at all in your business, what would it be and why?
I don't know that I would change anything that I'm doing or engaged in right now, but if I could wave a wand and have something extra, I would do. My consultancy is targeted at technology companies. And the people that are decision makers in those, these are wicked smart, scary smart individuals. But they view marketing in very suspect terms. Because it's fuzzy. You know, it's hard to, as the old saying goes, you know, I spent, you know, for every dollar I spend on marketing, I don't know which half is wasted and which half actually worked. And that's very hard to quantify. And the tech mindset is very, it's binary. It's zeros and ones. It's on, off. It works. It doesn't work. ROI or no ROI. So I guess if I could wave a wand and add anything to my consultancy, it would be some way to bear out and prove quickly and quantifiably the effectiveness of what I'm doing. And I know people might jump right in and think, oh, but Dean, there's all kinds of tools and things that do that. Yes, but they're all, I don't know. I've yet to see one thing that can measure something like that very effectively. You know, there's, you know, click-through rates and this and that. But it'd be nice to be able to say, well, this campaign generated, or let me back that up. This branding project that I did for that client generated X $100,000 of revenue in its first year of existence. That is very difficult to do in the creative industry.
Definitely. I would love to actually see that myself, some sort of effective way to measure the ROI on any sort of marketing dollars that are put out is amazing. That would be awesome. And again, I agree with you. There's definitely, you know, plenty of tools that provide you with feedback and information on analytics and so forth for sites, but in terms of a quantified platform that actually shows you the full-fledged return on every piece from every facet is really, that's an exciting thought. It would be a wonderful thing if the techie industry or the techie community, I should say, can get to work. Hopefully we'll see that coming mm-hmm. up soon.
Well, it's especially difficult with what I do and how I position myself, which is a branding professional. Well, the notion of branding to creatives and people, especially people who work in the industry, that's, we understand that instantly. We get that.
Right.
But branding to the non-creative person is a little nebulous. It's a little fuzzy. It's not a quantifiable thing, again, that I can point to and say, oh, my branding generated that amount of revenue for that company. Did it help? Absolutely. But the product was probably good and the adoption was greater in, you know, a certain demographic than another by some, you know, phase of the moon. There's nothing, it's just a little fuzzy with branding. So it's very hard to point to something at it and say that was responsible for X thing, because, you know, even the big brands, the companies, you know, you think of Coke and Apple and things like that, they couldn't even say, you know, that commercial we did with the, I think it was last Christmas, the boy who looks like he's sort of like not engaged with his family.
Right.
He looks like he's on the phone the whole time. And it turns out he's making a movie about the family. It's a real tearjerker. It's a beautiful, brilliant ad for Apple. Pure branding, pure image, emotional connection to the consumer. There's no way that they could say, yep, that commercial was responsible for an extra 18% in sales over the holiday season. They just can't.
Right. You know, if we had some way of magically surveying each and every customer and figuring out, you know, how much branding affected what they, you know, that would be amazing. I'm sure it's something that many years from now we may actually have technology to measure something of that sort. But I grasp what it is that you're explaining in terms of the actual effect of the branding project in terms of the return on investment of it. I get it. So techie community, you definitely have your work cut out for you guys. So get to it. Dean, please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
I'm on the usual netwebs. You can find me on LinkedIn. Just my name, Dean Logan. I'm on Twitter. My handle is @Dino1739. I'm on about.me, which is a personal promotion platform that lives online, and I've got my website for my consultancy is foundationbranding.com, and if someone's really interested, the stuff that I do, and I don't have to make the logo bigger, is my personal sculpture site, and that's just deanlogan.com.
Awesome, Dean. You have been absolutely outstanding. Thank you so much once again for sharing this morning.
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate you having me on the show.
A computer can easily make a bad idea look polished, so remember to sketch your ideas out first and reach out to Dean Logan at foundationbranding.com, or you can always reach him through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/Dean Logan. Dean, thank you for taking time out of your schedule today to share with the audience. We truly, truly appreciate it. And Techie Community, thank you guys for checking out the episode. If you're enjoying these episodes as much as I'm enjoying recording them, head on over to iTunes, click on that subscribe button, and you won't miss anything. Until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.